Hey, everybody. Thanks for taking the time to listen to this podcast from Forest City North Church. We're a church in London, Ontario. And our hope is that this message that you're listening to will have an impact on your life. I encourage you to grab a coffee, make yourself a tea, sit back, and enjoy this message. This morning, we're going to talk about the fear of the future. And how I would like to get into the conversation is by doing a bit of a memory thing for you. I don't want you to speak out loud. I don't want you to put your hand in the air. I don't want you to talk to the person beside you. What I'm going to do is I'm going to present things from the past to you, and I want you to remember where you were and how you felt. All right? So we're just going to fill this in a little bit. It's going to go somewhere, hopefully, by the end of this conversation. So let's try this, okay? So for some of you who have some years under your belt, where were you and what did you feel when you heard that JFK was shot, right? Some of you are in that demographic. I was not around at that point. I was only in the mind of God at that moment, but some of you were. Where were you and what did you feel? Think through that. Bring that back to your memory. Others of you, let me see. Where were you and what were you feeling when you heard that the space shuttle Challenger had blown up? And that was, I believe, in the 80s, in the mid to late 80s. I was homesick from school that day, watching The Price is Right. I grew up in New Brunswick. We only had one channel, Channel 6. I was watching Price is Right, and they interrupted it to show us this news flash that the Space Shuttle Challenger had blown up. I remember where I was and what I felt in that moment. Where were you when you heard that Desert Storm had started and back in the 90s? Where were you when you heard about the planes that crashed into the World Trade Center, the Twin Towers? What did you think? What did you feel? When you heard for the first time that Donald Trump had become the president of the United States, where were you? I did not expect that response. Shame on all of you. How about this one? Ready for this? December 31st, 1999. Some of you are like, oh, that's way too specific. How about it being a Friday night, December 31st, 1999? Do you remember where you were? What you're feeling? For some of you, you got it right away. That was the moment in time when there was fear driving most of our society and our culture. Why? Because we were afraid of what? Y2K. For those of you who weren't born at that time or not in tune with it, there was a lot of fear around what was going to happen when the computers switched over. Like, were planes going to fall out of the sky? You know, what was going to happen? People were so afraid that they began to withdraw money from their bank account because they were afraid that they wouldn't be able to get money from their bank accounts anymore. People started building bunkers and storing up food pantry and just there was so much fear. That night, I don't know why we did this, but on that night, our family, we went to Laser Quest. I have no idea. You know, I don't know why we did that. I mean, those things could have become real, you know. It's a computer thing, you know. And we're like coming home with no kids because I won that night. I know that. I never let my kids win at anything. I beat them every time. I didn't care how young they were. I was going to win. So that was a possibility that I wouldn't come home without kids if they became real. But we look back on this and we go, ah, we made it. Everything is fine. But when you peel back the layers, you begin to realize that fear was a driving force in around that window of time. Media, news, everything was driving the fear factor. So many people were in the grip of the fear of the future. You know, when we think about that this morning, and we think about that situation or other situations that maybe come to our minds, we begin to realize that fear is often the driving force in many of our lives, and the fear of the future. We started this series last week called No Fear, and we looked at it through the lens of fear of failure. If you heard that talk or were part of that talk, you know that we talked about this idea of the internal issue driven by external forces. So we live with a fear of failure of what are people going to say about us? How are people going to respond to us? Are they going to accept us? And so we kind of tiptoed into the idea of fear of failure is attached to rejection and shame, which is in turn connected to our ego and our pride and our self-worth. And so we don't do anything that has the potential of us failing. So we pull back out of fear of failure because we don't want people to know that we're imperfect. And so we don't step into those moments of vulnerability and transparency and authenticity because we're too afraid. We're afraid of what would happen if we fail and what were people going to say about us. And so we started examining how we can switch our mindset and how we can begin to confess these things and begin to expose these areas of our lives to find hope. Now, I think it's important to understand as we think about last week and this week and the topic of no fear is this. The simple truth is this. We're not trying to eliminate fear from our lives. I don't think that that's possible. But what we're trying to do in this series is to illuminate a path that we can walk through our fear so that fear no longer has a grip in our lives. So it doesn't hold us back. See, my suspicion is this morning is that there are some of us here that have a fear of the future. And even though you don't wear a sign, and even though you don't wear a label, and even though you don't post it on social, you know that there is a fear that has gripped you about the future. You look at your life and you go, will I find the right person to spend the rest of my life with? Will I have enough money to retire? Will I find the right school to be part of? Will I get the right job for who I am? Will I find purpose? Will I find connection? Will I find meaning? And we live into these fears. But then there's fears that are even bigger than that. There are fears that of the phone call tomorrow that the doctor's going to make to your phone. And he's going to give you an update on the test results. And you live in fear of that future phone call. Or maybe you live in fear of what you're going to do with your aging parents. How are you going to care for them? My kids tell my wife all the time they've got the home picked out for her already. Got that taken care of. Or maybe it's the simple fears of, I just don't know what my future is going to look like. See, as I begin to reflect on this week, and as I began to pull fear of the future apart, I began to realize there's a word that emerges. It's the word worry. Worry begins to emerge through the cracks of our fear of the future. I began realizing how clear worry gets a hold of us, and then worry feeds our fear, and fear feeds our worry, and then before you know it, it's this circulatory thing that's taking place in our lives. It's like the spinning top. We yank the worry, and it just spins and spins and spins, and we become fascinated with it, we become focused on it, and we become enamored by it, and we become in the grip of it, and it just seizes us up, and we're unable to move because worry gets a hold of us. We can't see clearly. A couple years ago, I went to a half-day seminar on depression, anxiety, and worry. And I was doing some research on our very first mental wellness Sunday that we did here at Forest City North, and I went and I sat in on this course. It was amazing. The guy that was teaching it had some great insight and perspective on depression, anxiety, and worry, and I was writing notes, and I was actually writing notes with my thumbs. That's what that was, just so you know. I was typing it in my phone, and then he started talking about worry, and I was intrigued by what he said because he talked about the chemicals that are released in our bodies when we worry. I'm not a doctor. I didn't know these things. And so he started talking about the chemicals that are released when we worry. And then he said something very interesting. He said this. He said, the chemicals that are released in our bodies when we worry don't know if the thing that we're worrying about has actually happened or not. It can't differentiate between reality and truth and whether it's just something that you've imagined. And so our bodies physically respond. So tease this out for me. Let's say you go, you put your head on your pillow every single night and you worry about losing your job. You get up in the morning and you worry about losing your job. You go to work and you worry about losing your job. And so you start worrying about it. Your body doesn't know the difference if you've actually lost your job or not. It responds to the worry as if it's actually happened. I mean, think about the devastating effect of that and how it directly impacts you mentally, emotionally, relationally. You begin looking at all the words that your boss or manager is using and it starts messing with you because you're responding as if you've already lost your job. Worry gets a hold of us and gets a grip in our lives. And it feeds the fear of the future. Now, I think it's important to throw something on the table for us to consider. Because I think there is a difference between concern and worry. There's a difference between these two things. See, concern actually mobilizes us to take action. So concern about something, it mobilizes you to seek out answers. It mobilizes you to find solutions, to find hope, to enter into conversation. So for example, let me tease this out for you about some of my concerns. So I'm like a lot of you, I have a concern about where everything's going, our future. Not us as a church, I'm just talking about society and culture in general. I really do. Now, for me, my concern doesn't go into worry because my concern is influenced by the fact that I'm a person of faith, that I have confidence in this book here called the Bible, that the Bible actually paints a picture for me of what God is ultimately going to do to restore and renew all things. That there's going to come a place and a time when God brings his righteousness and his judgment to bear and his justice to bear on all things. And so I have a general sense of confidence in knowing that God is going to actually restore all things. But I still have concerns about where things are going. Like maybe you do. Like I when I woke up the morning after the election in the States, and I'm venturing into an area that is way out of my knowledge and understanding, so I'm just going to share with you my personal experience of that moment. I am not qualified to speak into these things. I'm just not, but I want to share with you something. Because I hear this a lot in the rumblings of conversation. When I woke up that morning and heard who had won that election, when I had heard that Donald Trump had won, I actually felt inside like something shifted. My internal gut told me that something shifted. Now, it might have been something I ate the night before, but it was. I'm pretty sure it was something very significant. Now, before you start assuming anything, don't start assuming my hunch and my internal shift was bad or good. It wasn't either one of those things. It was just a general sense of concern that something had shifted. And so my concern has forced me to actually be exposed to other things about what is going on with related to this whole topic that many people of us hang on to. And so I find ways to have conversations about it. I find ways to actually encourage. I find ways to not always listen to the news reports on this particular topic. And so, because I want to remain somewhat balanced on this approach to this, something shifted inside of me. Because I was concerned. So it mobilized me. I have another concern. I have a concern that political correctness is defining what is right and wrong these days. I have a concern about that. Now, in some cases, political correctness is good and important for us. But when it's taken too far, what ends up happening is if you have a different opinion than what is popular, then you're automatically labeled. And we can no longer have decent conversations around these things. So for me, when I think about and the concern that I have about political correctness and where it's all headed and the ability to have a conversation about it, is I find ways to enter into the conversation and present a way in which we can look at it differently, have conversation about it. The problem with our culture and society is it's a no-go zone in a lot of ways. It's dividing families. It's dividing friends. And so for me, I look at this as a concern, and I go, okay, how do I enter in? Because I want it to mobilize me. Worry does what? Worry immobilizes us. Worry does the complete opposite. Worry actually takes us into the zone where we become crippled, where we recoil back, where we stay hidden below the covers because we don't want to peek our heads above into the culture and society, so we just pull back and in the fetal position. I had to do that because of the womb. Some of you picking that up. Oh, that was good. Come on. That was good. I thank you. I don't know. Just my brain's going there. I just run with it. See, worry and fear of the future immobilizes us. And when it immobilizes us, it keeps us from discovering our greatness. See, I live with the fundamental belief that each and every one of us are created for greatness. A greatness in the way that we begin to discover the full expression of what God desires for our lives. Fear of the future keeps us from learning and discovering what that is. If God looks at us and he says, you are my masterpiece, Fear keeps us from discovering what that masterpiece is because it immobilizes us. It keeps us stuck. Concern mobilizes us to find ways and solutions and conversations to find hope, to move forward. Worry keeps us stuck. Jesus talked about worry. One of the greatest moments of Jesus' teaching speaks about worry. Jesus interacts on this, and he helps us understand how we can find a path through it. I want to take you to the story. I want to take you to the teachings of Jesus. It's found in Matthew chapter 6, and don't put it on the screen yet because I want to set it up. This moment in Jesus' teaching is in Matthew chapter 6, where he has just finished teaching on money. And he had been teaching on money in a way that helps the listener understand that where your treasure is, your heart will follow. So he says, you can put your money towards the things of this earth and it will leave you wanting and unsatisfied. And he talks about how that can be taken away from us. Or he talks about we can put our money towards the things of God's work in this world, which gives us life, which gives us hope. So he says, where your treasure is, your heart is going to follow. On the heels of that teaching, he drops in this worry talk and teaches us something very, very important. Let me read it for you. In Matthew chapter 6, verse 25, it says this. That is why I tell you not to worry about everyday life, whether you have enough food and drink or enough clothes to wear. Isn't life more than food and your body more than clothing? Look at the birds. They don't plant or harvest or store food in barns, for your heavenly Father feeds them. And aren't you far more valuable to him than they are? Can all your worries add a single moment to your life? And why are you worrying about clothing? Look at the lilies of the field and how they grow. They don't work or make their clothing, yet Solomon in all his glory has not dressed as beautifully as they are. And if God cares so wonderfully for the wild flowers that are here today and thrown into the fire tomorrow, he will certainly care for you. Why do you have so little faith? This is a great moment in the teachings of Jesus. I mean, Jesus is a master teacher, and he's a master communicator, obviously, and that goes without saying, but he takes common things to illustrate truth, to point us to truth. And so he takes birds and he takes lilies, and he relates it to the necessities of life. He talks about drink, food, and clothing, the things that we need, right? Unless you live in a nudist colony, we need these things. We need clothing, we need food, and we need drink. And he says, listen, these are the things about life that are so important. He takes the birds, for example, and he says, the birds, they fly about and they do their thing. They build their nest, they feed their young, they get food. And he says to them, listen, isn't God values these things? He says, isn't God more sees you more valuable than these particular birds? And we go, oh man, you know what? I never really thought about the value that God places on these created beings called birds that fly around. Yeah, they fly around my backyard. They fly around and we see them, but we don't take notice all that much unless you're a bird person. And you kind of go, wow, I never thought about this. But then he takes it a step farther and he says, think about the lilies, these wild flowers. Man, they're here today and gone tomorrow. They're gone. And he says, even those things God cares about. He's taking these moments and these things and he's saying, think about this. I want you to understand this. God sees these birds and he values them and you're more valuable than these birds. And he cares for these wildflowers and he cares more for you than he does for these things. And people are going, oh yeah, I'm digging this. I like this, you know. It's like, oh, worry and the birds and the flowers. Isn't this great? And then Jesus does something so masterful. He goes, he takes them to this place and they're like, almost like, you know, in a trance-like, and he goes, and can all your worries add a single moment to your life? He takes us down this path over this way, and then he goes, boom, takes us in another direction. He says, can your worries right now add a single moment to your life? Well, here's what's happening here. We get lost in sort of the translation from the original to the English in this particular section, and what he's talking about here is so powerful. He's talking about a single moment. What he's referring to is time. What he's referring to is time. Can your worry add time to your life? And then he says life, which is referring to stature, which is height, which is a cubit, which I would understand is cubit is like 18 inches. So Jesus literally drives into this place where he says, listen, all your worry, all the concerns about the future. It's not adding time to the clock. It's not giving you more hours. It's not adding to your stature. It's not increasing who you are. What is Jesus saying? Jesus is saying worry actually takes life from you. It takes time from you. It takes stature from you. You think that you're living into the fullness of who you are, but you're living with the illusion of it because worry is actually taking these things from you. It's not adding to you. It's a powerful moment. Jesus drives home this wonderful truth that the fear that we have right now about our future is absolutely no benefit to you whatsoever. None. Zero. The fear you have of the future that has a grip in your life, that's fed by worry, is adding nothing to who you are as a person and is not adding time to the clock of your life. It's actually taking away. And the other thing that I wonder about is happening is that when we worry, when fear becomes part of who we are, we neglect and maybe are unable to at times see how valuable we are in God's eyes and how much He cares for us. Think about that for a moment. The one thing that we wonder about, does God care about me? Does God see me as valuable? It's very possible that the worries that you have are actually taking that away from you so that you can't see it, you can't experience it, you can't experience it, and you can't know it. Because fear of the future and worry adds nothing to our lives. It only takes away. Jesus brings to light this powerful truth about worry, but then you notice what he does. He helps us understand the fundamental base of where worry comes from, and it has to do with faith. Look at the verse. The very last line of Matthew 6, verse 30, he says, "Why do you have so little faith?" See, I wonder if we think about it and if we are willing to be honest about it and strip it right down, we come to this foundational truth that our worry about the future is a faith issue. I want to say something that might be tough for some of us to hear and understand, but as I think about it being a faith issue, what I began to realize is that when I'm worried, when I obsessively worry, what I'm saying to God is, I don't trust you. That I look at God through that lens of worry and fear of the future, and I say, you know what, God, I'm pretty sure I can do a better job at the future of my life than you can. Excessive worry takes us in that place where it takes us away from learning to walk by faith. Jesus says, "You of little faith." See, when we hold on to our worry tightly, it gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and faith says, I want you just to let it go and surrender it to me. Last week, I introduced this thought that this incredible thing that emerges from the Bible, and it's this idea and this phrase of do not be afraid. It's a great phrase. Do not be afraid. We see it 145 times in the Bible. That's significant when you think about it. One of the verses that emerges as it relates to faith and letting go and surrender is a verse in Joshua chapter 1, verse 9. Let me read it for you. It says this. "This is my command. Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid or discouraged, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go." See, when we think about fear, it's attached to discouragement, and discouragement deflates our lives and keeps us from moving forward. But in this particular verse, God speaks to Joshua and says, be strong and courageous. Here's what's going down. Joshua has been given the leadership role of God's people called the Israelites. Moses has been the leader up to this point. Moses is no longer with them, and God gives the assignment to Joshua. Joshua is now going to lead God's people in what is called the Promised Land, the land that God has given to them. And in this moment, God speaks into Joshua's life and he says, be strong and courageous. Now, what God is not doing here is God is not saying to Joshua, you got this, buddy. I know you can do it. I believe in you. He's not rallying the troops going, yeah, you know, start the music. Boom, boom, boom. And, you know, we're going to pump you up, Joshua, because we believe in you. You can do this. This is not what God is doing. is not a pep rally. What God is doing here in this moment of saying, be strong and courageous, is he's saying to Joshua, listen, Joshua, in order to, for you to face this future that I've given you, I want you to attach yourself to me. That be strong and courageous carries this idea that we go through life attaching our lives to someone greater than ourselves. That we attach ourselves to someone who is greater than ourselves so that we can walk by faith. The be strong is not about pulling up the bootstraps. It's not about, you got this, I know, I believe in you, you can do this. No. It's about going through life in a way that says, God, I'm going to attach myself to you so that fear doesn't keep me from my future. I am going to attach myself to you, God, so that worry doesn't become a wart. No idea where that came from. That was going to be earlier in the talk, but I forgot. Maybe that's where it came from. So that no longer... See, God's saying to Joshua, listen. You attach yourself to me, and here's what's going to happen. I'm going to walk with you into the future, but I'm going to be there when you get there. Right? See, that's where some of us get fear. We're afraid of what the future holds. Will God be there? Will I have the strength? Will I know? I have the privilege of actually walking with people through tough times. I know it sounds strange even saying that, but there's something about it. And there's something about getting a call of someone walking through a terrible time, and I'm invited into that moment, and I get to walk with people, and I get to observe and learn from them. And one of the things that amazes me is oftentimes what happens is the incredible strength that they have. And then I come out of that situation, and I'll go, and someone will say to me, how are they doing? I said, you're not going to believe this. They're doing so well. And then the conversation goes like this. You've probably been part of it, maybe even said it yourself. You're like, I don't know what I would do if I was in their shoes. I don't know how I would handle that devastation. I don't know how I would take that tragedy. I don't know what I would do if I got that report, or I don't know what I would do if I lost so-and-so. You know what? We look at that from the outside. We go, I don't know what I would do when I get there. But when you attach yourself to the one who is greater than you, he says, I'll be there when you get there. I'll be there to be your strength in that moment so that you don't have to face it alone. And then you begin to realize what faith looks like. And then faith, attaching yourself to someone greater than yourself and being strong, gives you the courage to take steps towards what is difficult and potentially ugly and the struggle that lies in front of you. See, courage is not the absence of fear. It's the ability to take the strength that God gives us and to face it and to walk into it. You know, this morning, I don't know where you find yourself in this whole continuum of understanding faith and courage and attaching yourself to someone greater than yourself, but I saw this week. I met with this couple from our church. They're here this morning. They said it's okay to share with you. We were talking about some things that they're going to do in the life of our church. They're going to step up to some leadership roles. It's going to be very, very exciting. And in the middle of the conversation, we were at Starbucks, and the wife says, hey, I'm losing my job in March. And she said it so kind of like nonchalant. I said, well, how does that make you feel? And she looked at me with the biggest smile on her face. She says, you know what? I'm good. She said, I know that my hands are, my life is in God's hands, and I know that whatever happens at that moment, that God's going to provide. And she began explaining this. And what I found in this moment wasn't cliche, it wasn't glib, it wasn't naive. It was this beautiful moment of demonstration of her saying, you know what? God will be there when I get there because I realize who my strength is in this moment. I want to ask you a question this morning. Is your current solution to your fear of your future working? The solution that you believe right now is going to help you face your fear of the future, the solution you've put in play that's going to help you deal with your worry, is it working? If it is, great. But my encouragement this morning, my challenge is this to you, is that would you consider actually letting go of the reins of your life? Would you actually consider releasing your hands around your fear of the future and the worry that you have? And would you be willing to say, God, I want to surrender my life to you. I'm done playing God. I'm done thinking that I can be in control of everything. Today, would you be willing to say, I want to attach myself to you, God, so that I can face this uncertain future, whatever it may be? And when you do, you begin to discover the strength and the courage to face that thing. You know, I know that, okay, I was writing this week and I was super worried. No, I wasn't worried. I was concerned because I can actually do something about it. Yeah, I did. I stuck my foot in my mouth, hey? You use a W word, anyway. I was concerned that we would end our conversation this morning and that you would think that I just came up with a cliche, glib answer to this thing about facing the future. Well, of course you're supposed to say faith. You run a church, of course. Even as I wrote, a friend of mine in the church, we text and keep each other accountable with things. He and I were texting this week, and I was saying, I'm not sure what to do with this. And he was texting back, trying to encourage me, and I was texting him back, and we were talking about the cliche answer to the future. Oh, it's about faith. But as I strip it back, I realize that's exactly what it is. The only way we can face these future that we're afraid of is by faith. No matter what the outcome is, that God will be there when we get there. There's a verse in the Bible. It's 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 7. It's a verse that I hope all of us memorize. It says that God has not given us a spirit of fear and timidity, but of power, love, and self-discipline. If you're here this morning and you're like, Ron, you don't understand. My worry, it has been a pattern of my life that I'm unable to break. I want to say this to you. That God has given us a spirit of power, love, and self-discipline. That God, when you attach your life to him, he can develop and help you develop these new disciplines to break free from the power and the clutches of worry. And so that you may be free. As we close this service, I hope that you'll think about these things, contemplate these things, and look at how faith can actually help you face your future. And when they're done, I'll come and close. Let's stand together. Let's stand. Thanks, Luke, for leading us in that closing song. We recognize as a church that we are all at different stages of understanding faith and God. And my prayer all week has been is that this conversation this morning has moved us a little bit closer to truly understanding how God desires us to live our lives. That you will live by faith. Not naive, not simple faith, but a faith that attaches ourselves to the one who says, I will walk with you and I will be there when you get there. Next week, we're going to talk about fear of death. And I hope that you'll be back for that conversation. And I'm looking forward to giving some perspective on this for our lives so that we can walk into this understanding of fear of death with no fear. Let's pray together. God, thank you for this morning. And we thank you so much for the wonderful power and truth of faith. That we can attach ourselves to you, God, that we can walk with you and that you see us and that you value us and that you care for us. God, I pray that you would give us great examples of that today. That as we leave this place, we will have our ears and our eyes and our hearts open to what you have for us. Continue the conversation with us as we leave this place. God, I know that there are some here today that are in the grip of the fear of the future and the worry has overwhelmed them. God, I pray that you would begin to release them from it. And like Jesus says, let's just focus on today because tomorrow has enough of its own worries. God, I thank you for these truths. Help us to experience them and know them and live them. And we pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. We'll see you next week.